Hello and welcome to Table Talk. This is the podcast where we connect current culture with Christianity. Today we are joined in our virtual studio by Rachel Jones, and we're going to be talking about the rise of the quarter-life crisis. So really excited to chat through that with you, Rachel. Jacko, why don't you tee us up a little bit?
Yeah, well, I was just intrigued by this, really looking forward to chatting with Rachel. But I mean, we've all heard of the midlife crisis, right? That's so stereotypical of typically men going to buy sports cars, usually Porsches, that sort of thing, lying about their age, going to the gym, etc., etc. Like, we've all heard of that. But yeah, I hadn't come across this idea of a quarter-life crisis before. I don't know about you, G. So I thought, wow, given most of our listeners are table talkers, they're banging that age range. I'm like, we've got to talk about this. It's an important topic.
Do you know what? I actually have come across this before, and I've chatted to some people about this. And actually, when I brought it up, it was in a group of like five or six people, and they all said, yeah, do you know what? Like, I totally feel that as well. And it was just kind of that sense of like, what are we doing? What is this all for? Like, you know, we've kind of, a lot of us had moved to London. We'd kind of got jobs. We felt like it was the moment in our lives where we should feel most driven, most fulfilled, most sort of clear on the direction we were going in. And yet suddenly we were like, gosh, what, you know, we've been doing this for a couple of years and we're in this moment of like crisis of, well, hang on, this doesn't feel quite as fulfilling as I thought it might. So it's a really interesting one. So I'm definitely keen to unpack like some of the symptoms, some of the causes, maybe if we can even get into some of the cures.
No pressure,
Rachel.
Okay. Well, Rachel, you are a author and an editor, and in your own words, right, just so our listeners don't think I'm being mean, you say your qualification for that is that you were your English teacher's favourite pupil.
Yeah, that's from the slightly tongue-in-cheek bio on the back of the book. But yeah, I believe I was my English teacher's favourite. I've got no hard and fast evidence.
Okay. What was her name? What was your English teacher's name?
She was called Mrs. Farrell.
Mrs. Farrell. And yeah. Did you always like, did you think you might be an author or an editor growing up?
No, I completely fell into it. So yeah, I did a history degree at university, like always. I was the weird one who likes writing essays. Yeah, when I graduated, I got an internship at the publishing company where I work now and who published this book, Is This It? And the rest is history, really.
The rest is history.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Mrs. Farrell, if you're listening, get in touch. Either confirm or deny that Rachel was your favourite pupil. That would be perfect. Drop us a line.
Where was this? I can sense a northern twang in your accent, Rachel. Was it somewhere up north?
This is a slight Lancashire twang.
I love that.
Yeah, Lancashire.
Okay, well, there we go. That narrows it down a little bit. Okay, well, Rachel, also, in your own words, you say you are married to no one and have zero kids, and frequently question where your life is going. Is that all still true, or has anything changed? So that was 3 years ago.
I'd say that's still largely true. Since writing the book, I have bought a flat, though, which makes me feel like a bit of a sellout to my former self. But yeah, that is proof that my life has moved on since.
Okay, well, we'll come back to that. Buying flats is a really interesting topic. Okay, the others are still ticks.
Yeah.
Great. Well, you're perfect then for doing an episode on quarter-life crisis.
Yeah, I guess so.
Can we start with a little quiz? We did this last time. I think we love quizzes, don't we?
I quite enjoy a quiz at the start.
This is a quiz on whether you might be in or imminently about to have a quarter-life crisis, okay? So, one, you frequently find yourself asking, what should I do with my life? Graham?
I wouldn't say, no, I'd say false on that one.
False. Rachel?
Yeah.
Sometimes.
I'm going to say I have some quite big thoughts in the shower and sometimes I have some crazy ideas. So I'm going to go with yeah, kind of. Right.
Okay. Just to say, Jacko, if anyone's listening, it's 1 point for any true answers and you can play along with us if you're listening to this. So, okay. So you've kind of got half a point.
I'm going to go for half a point. Okay. Number two, watching sitcoms from your adolescence on Netflix makes everything feel better. Graham?
I mean, I did completely binge all of Friends when it came out again and I felt great. So
okay.
I think I'll probably
give you 2 points. 2 points. Rachel?
Yeah, I think so. Same.
What, would you be a Friends girl or?
Yeah, I mean, Friends is definitely the sitcom from my adolescence that takes you to a happy place.
What about the OC? Is that a sitcom?
Oh, it's not really a sitcom. What's funny about that?
Yeah, nothing funny about that. It's really deep and it's tragic. Okay, I'm going for a zero on that for me. I kind of like it when it's on, but no. Number three. You still keep loads of stuff in your house that you grew up in. That's number three. Okay, Rachel, I'm coming to you first. Where yes. you are on... Yes, okay. By loads, what we're talking? Like a cupboard, a skip, a garage?
My mother makes me chip away at it literally every time I visit. She sort of produces these boxes that you have to sort through. But there's more in the attic.
Graham, do you have anything left from your childhood?
I think I'm now a no on that. I for a long time had my room in my parents' house was full of like old sports gear and cricket bats and various different cricket pads and hockey stuff. So, but no, I think that's all pretty much gone now. So hopefully I won't ever need it again.
Okay. Number five. You wonder whether you've really got friends anymore. Who wants to go first?
For sure, for me.
Yeah, okay, can you talk us through that? What do you mean? Because you sound so nice. You must have some friends.
Oh, yeah, I've got some friends, but do I have enough friends? Have I got less friends than anyone else? You know, just like it feels like a constant battle to keep in touch with friends. You look away for a second and then you've drifted away from this person or that person.
Graham, can you relate to that?
That is really interesting. I actually feel like I'm still pretty well connected with my friends. And I would say that that is to a reasonably significant extent down to WhatsApp groups.
Does that actually count?
Yeah, I mean, does that count?
Is it is what you're saying is you send a GIF on a WhatsApp group every now and again?
Yeah, daily GIFs, and I feel like my connection is just tip top. So, yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't say I particularly struggle with that. I wouldn't say I particularly kind of compare myself to others of how popular am I, how many friends do I have. I think I've got a decent number of close friends, and I feel reasonably well connected to them.
Do you want feedback on that? Because we could always ask people to kind of send in their feedback at tabletalkfeedback@gmail.com confirm or deny whether you are actually a good friend.
Yes, please do. I mean, all feedback welcome. Please be kind, but yeah.
Okay, great. Keep going. So you dread family occasions because relatives will ask you what you're doing with your life. What a great question. Rachel?
I mean, dread is a strong word. I love my family, but, you know, sometimes one has to justify one's decisions in a way that leaves you a little bit sad on the inside.
Okay.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, I feel like, I mean, again, I'm probably a no on that one. I wouldn't say I dread family occasions ever. It can sometimes be a little bit interesting. Yeah, I'm in recruitment, but I sometimes feel a little bit like, oh yeah, I'm in recruitment, which is a shame because it's a brilliant job and loads of great people do it. But I sometimes feel that way. But I wouldn't say I dread those situations.
Okay, I'm going to go with 0 points for me as well. What is interesting though, right, my parents-in-law do a little Christmas newsletter each year, which I get like a little insert into with like some interesting updates on my life. And I always enjoy reading that back just to see like what they think I've achieved in the past year. So that's always good to just...
I'm the same. And I love it. My mum sends one every year. And I always wait to see what my new job title is. What is it that I
Graham is doing some interesting stuff.
Graham has an interesting job. And then it's very quickly on to my next sibling.
This is a great one. Number eight. Yeah. Sorry, we need to keep moving, don't we? This is going to be the whole podcast. Life was definitely better when you were a teenager. Rachel, true or false?
Probably false, actually.
False. Zero for you.
Yeah, I think so.
How were your teenage years?
I mean, they were golden. Loved it. But I do feel more at home in my own skin now. And I look at teenagers today and I think... I'm glad I don't have to be 15 again because it's stressful.
Totally. A big fat zero for me.
Yeah,
no
fat
chance.
Zero for me. I was such a troubled teenager.
Well, I mean, I enjoyed my teenage years. I think I had a lot of fun, a lot of good memories. But a lot of cricket. I just think about it now, though, and I'm like, no way. I just wouldn't want to do it again. No chance.
My golden years were like... kind of 2021, that sort of year.
You pine for that, do you?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Okay, anyway. Okay. Nine. I love this, right? Nine. You suspect that quitting everything and going traveling might just solve all your problems. Oh, come on.
I mean, it might, but then, then my rational brain tells me it probably wouldn't.
Do you not entertain that a little bit more?
Oh, yeah, you know, you entertain it, but yeah.
It's funny, right? I was actually having a conversation with a friend of mine this week about this. I was like, when did it become aspirational to like live in the back of a van in a field. I just, that whole trend of like, I'm just going to quit everything and I'm going to put a mattress in the back of a van and go live in a field. And I'm like, what? What? When?
I would love to see your mum's newsletter with a picture of you in the back of a van and be like,
yes, Graham lives in a van now. Now, don't get me wrong. I think after the pandemic, a lot of people finding out they can work remotely, this whole idea of kind of being a bit of a digital nomad and just having a laptop and being based in a cafe on a beach somewhere, like, I can see that that's quite cool. But I don't know. I think there's a lot of benefits to just being based in a great city like London and having a life here. So yeah,
are you saying true or false for you though?
I'm saying false.
Really?
I said false for all of them. Yeah. My take home from this quiz is that Graham is the ideal human.
Yeah,
that is what I've got.
He always scores. Honestly, Rachel, don't buy into it. He always scores well in the quiz. I'm going to go for one on that one. I'm with Rachel. Like, I just have this thought that, oh, like, imagine being in Thailand, and I kind of think naively I'd be like a gazillionaire, and like, life would just be fine because it would always be sunny and food would cost me like 3p and I'd just kind of survive forever without having to work or really do anything.
It's such an interesting one. Have you ever seen, so I was watching a thing the other day, you know, Jordan Peterson, and he was talking about this and he was saying that like a lot of people will talk about their retirement and just say, oh, I'm going to go sit on a beach and drink pina coladas. And he's like, that's not a life choice. That's like a week's holiday. Like, can you imagine doing that for 20 years? Like, you would be in terrible, terrible shape. Like, what, you're going to drink pina coladas for 20 years? Like, this is going to be crazy. So I don't know. I think it's very sort of charming and appealing at surface level. And I think when you get into the logistics and practicalities of it, it starts to quite quickly sort of, you know, some holes appear in it. Yeah, I don't know. Off the back of this quiz, I would say I'm probably not approaching a quarter-life crisis on this basis, which I'm happy about. How are you feeling?
Yeah, same. I'm feeling okay. Rachel, how are you feeling?
Feeling okay. I wrote this book sort of 5 years ago when I was 25, 26. And I do feel like I'm in a different place mentally from what I was 5 years ago, which I say to say that there is hope. Like, you know, if you are feeling lost and lonely and like you're looking for something and you don't know what it is, life does get better. But equally, like, some of these things, they don't go away or they come back in different forms. But that's part and parcel of being human, I think.
I think that's a really fair point, actually, Rachel. I think if I'd been answering this quiz at the age of 24 or 25, so I graduated from uni and went to my first job and lasted there for about a year before I quit / was about to be fired. So that was the age of 23. If I'd been answering this quiz at that moment, I think I would have been like, you know, ones for all of these and certainly approaching a quarter life crisis. So yeah, I think timing is interesting.
Rachel, because that was kind of a lighthearted, fun introduction, but you're right. I mean, this is a serious topic. There'll be listeners really struggling and it's not age dependent necessarily. I mean, what even is the quarter of your life? It's somewhere in between probably 20 to 40 or something. So I think it's quite a wide bracket, but it'd be easy, wouldn't it, to dismiss this as just saying, oh, you know, stop being so entitled and kind of navel-gazing. There's no such thing really as a quarter-life crisis. I guess, could you, you've said it a little bit there, but why is this something we should take seriously, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, these are real struggles facing a lot of us. Now, I think, yeah, these are questions that we all grapple with at one time or another, and that kind of connect with our deepest needs as humans, our needs for relationships, our needs for a sense of purpose, a sense of sort of meaningful work. These are all things that are crucial to living happy and fulfilled human existence. And like you said, like, it can strike at any time. You know, someone loses their job, or, you know, their relationship breaks up, and actually they find themselves 10 years behind suddenly where they thought they would be, or, you know, the people around you move on. I'm, you know, currently a lot of my friends are having babies, and that, again, that raises up a whole load of questions. So yeah, I think can sort of strike at any kind of time in the 20s or 30s, or, and then you just morph into a midlife crisis, which is actually, I think, often similar questions at root.
Yeah. Do you, coming back to this kind of label of entitled, I guess just our generation can get labeled as slightly entitled, and we're slightly brittle. Do you think that's fair? Are you sympathetic to the challenges of our generation? Where would you be?
Am I a snowflake? I'm sympathetic. I think social media, it's a bit of a cliche to say this, but I do think that has played a big part in perhaps setting our generation apart from previous generations, and even more so now when I look at teenagers and students who I know for whom social media has been all even more all-consuming than it was for me when I was a teenager. You know, I was there sort of at the start. We had MySpace and Facebook and a smartphone when I was in uni, but not when I was 11. Yeah, I do think that kind of constant connectivity and that sort of ability to compare with other people contributes to this slightly wrought feeling that a lot of us feel sometimes. And also the idea that we have lots of choices in front of us. 100 years ago, you did what your dad did. If you were a woman, you just got married and you had some children. You know, you were sort of rooted in a local community. I mean, that's probably simplistic. Whereas now it's sort of, you know, you could go anywhere and do anything and be anyone. And on the one hand, that's quite liberating. But on the other hand, that can be quite disorientating because you're always worried that the road that you're on isn't the best one, you know, that one of these other multiple other options would be better. And that kind of leaves you sort of looking over your shoulder the whole time wondering, oh, what if?
Yeah, I mean, we just the previous episode we did was actually with a lady called Zoe Tubbs, and she was talking about this element of comparison, how easy it is to compare these days with not just people you know, but basically anyone on earth, you know, and that sense of comparison leading to a lack of contentment, some of these sort of existential kind of quarter life crisis type questions, you know. So really interesting. I mean, anyone listening, please do go back and listen to that one because it was a really fun episode. But Rachel, you tell a really kind of great story about, you know, your friend who went to New Zealand and came back feeling quite dissatisfied. I mean, can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah. So she'd gone to New Zealand, and from where I was sitting back in England, sort of in my nondescript office in a nondescript business park, it looked like she was having a great time. And yeah, it was only sort of when she came back that she revealed that actually she wasn't having a great time. She was really homesick because she didn't like her job, and she was sort of questioning a relationship and everything else. So that was a reminder for me that online appearances are only appearances. And
yeah,
the idea of Rachel, like you say, you would have just seen your friend's feed just coming through of amazing pictures from New Zealand. You don't get to see the backstory behind that. How is she actually feeling out there?
I also think it's like, it's the things that you place expectation on. So, you know, as I said earlier, like what if I'd answered that quiz when I was 23 years old, it would have been a very, very different set of answers. And I think I remember that time in my life as a really interesting period of, like, if I look back now, I learned a lot through that period because I placed so much expectation on, you know, I graduated, I got a good graduate job, I was moving down to London, like, I had everything made. And, you know, 9-10 months into that, having been living in London for a while, honestly, I'd never felt more lonely. I'd never felt more lost. And that was really weird because my expectations were so high that I had everything figured out and this was going to be the answer to everything. It was just going to be brilliant. And yet it just didn't deliver. And it was a really strange and quite unsettling time of like, my goodness, well, what do I do now? I thought I had the answers and this isn't working. The weight of expectation on some things just doesn't really stack up in the end often.
It's a bit like flying all the way to New Zealand. You're like, oh, I've spent all the money on the flights and I'm here now.
Yeah.
And yeah. Oh, gosh.
New Zealand better be epic.
Okay. So we're in causes now of the quarter life crisis. So we're kind of discussing, that's the first chapter you write, Rachel, on kind of dissatisfaction, which we're kind of discussing. Another cause you point to is this feeling of being paralyzed. Can I just read a quote that you quote in your book that I really liked, and then maybe we'll chat about it? So this is by a lady called Meg Jay in The Defining Decade. She's, Ian told me that his 20-something years were like being in the middle of the ocean, like this vast, unmarked body of water. He couldn't see land in any direction, so he didn't know which way to go. He felt overwhelmed by the prospect that he could swim anywhere or do anything. He was equally paralyzed by the fact that he didn't know which of the anythings would work. Tired and hopeless, at age 25, he said he was treading water to stay alive. It's quite a dramatic picture that it paints of this poor guy in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean just treading water, doesn't know which way to swim. And it reminded me of what you said, Rachel, which is like growing up, you know, you're basically told, oh, you can do anything. You could be anyone, you know, you reach for the stars. And that should feel like really freeing, like, yay. But actually, it's not freeing. It's quite paralyzing. If there's any experiences you've had, Rachel, or you could point to further experience of feeling paralyzed, I thought it was such an important chapter in your book.
Yeah, there was definitely a time in my life where, like, I didn't like my job. I didn't like where I was living. I felt like sort of dissatisfied with my friendships. So I looked at jobs online, but I didn't apply for any. You know, I looked at places to live, but, you know, didn't move. I was looking for an escape route, but never actually jumping off the edge. So instead, what I did was apply to appear on a TV game show because I was bored of life.
That's the answer.
I wanted to do something radical, but that was the most radical thing I could think of that was also sort of low stakes, I suppose. We fear change because even if we don't like our situation, at least we know, at least there's not the fear of the unknown there. And that came back to bite me a few years later when I appeared on the TV game show.
Wow.
And crashed and burnt.
Oh,
what
no.
What game show was it?
Yeah.
What show was it, Rachel?
It was The Chase with Bradley Walsh.
Okay.
ITV's favourite. Yeah.
Why did you crash and burn? What happened?
I'd apply for it, and then you're sort of in this pool that they might call any time. And then I'd forgotten about it, and it was like 3 years later, I got this call. My car had broken down that morning, so I was waiting for the garage to call me and give me the bad news. And I got a call from an unknown number, so I answered it, and it was The Chase saying, do you want to be on The Chase tomorrow? Someone's dropped out. We've got a space. I said to my colleagues, do I want to go on The Chase tomorrow? And they said, yes, you do. Sadly, I'd sort of forgotten how hard The Chase is. I just didn't get many answers right. It was fun. I got a free water bottle. So, you know.
There we go. The Chase is quite an intense one, to be fair. Yeah.
So I can imagine
if you get on a roll.
Your recommendation wouldn't be to apply for game show.
I mean, not with my general knowledge. No.
Graham, can you relate to this feeling of paralysis?
Yeah. I think for me, it slightly comes down not just to a sense of paralysis, of kind of lots of different, you know, you could in theory go and do many, many different things, but almost a sense of futility. Like, yes, I could go and do lots of these things, but ultimately, like, what does that lead to? What am I really achieving? You know, what in 1,000 years time, will anyone know that I existed or that I did these things? Like, and that sense of futility, I often find quite paralyzing. Yeah, I mean, this is going to take lots of energy and effort to go and do it. It's going to be hard work, but is it worth it? Mm. I often find that quite debilitating, if I'm honest.
It was interesting, Rachel, you said that you kind of thought about doing lots of things, but didn't quite do anything. So you were kind of constantly in a state of flux, which isn't very, presumably that wasn't a very nice feeling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, Rachel, rootlessness. You mentioned before, and we've got to talk about it, that the one thing that's changed in the last few years for you is that you bought a flat.
Yes. But
let's rewind to when you didn't have your flat. And I think it's a real issue, isn't it, for generation rent or whatever you want to call the 20-somethings. Do you have sympathy for how hard it is to get on the property ladder and the feeling of rootlessness?
Yeah, for sure. Like I think... When I wrote the book, I calculated that I'd like lived in 5 different houses in about 5 years with 15 different people, just with this sort of rotating cast of housemates, some of whom were great, some of whom were terrifying, some of whom were weird. And yeah, just this sense of feeling unsettled at home. Or again, there's this like with the paralysis thing, there's this feeling that you could live anywhere, you know. So I grew up in Lancashire, I'd moved down to Greater London, and so, you know, there was no reason I had to be there other than my job. So again, that was another thing that you could change. Should I change this? Is this, am I in the right place? Does it make sense to live somewhere else? So yeah, renting can sometimes be a bit crap, but so can home ownership. So, you know, it's just that's it.
Yeah. Talk to us about that, of going from renting to home ownership. So when did that happen, and did it fulfill your hopes and dreams?
That happened happened about a year ago. It was a mixture of things. I mean, I didn't really want to do it because I'm scared of committing. So at least if you're renting, you've always got the option to live somewhere else. I could uproot and relocate anytime I wanted. But yeah, basically my granddad had given me some money and I'd been accepted onto this course. I'm studying a part-time degree at the moment alongside working part-time. So it was like, okay, this is the next phase and it's here in this place. And my mother was like, Rachel, you've been given this money, just commit. Otherwise, every year it's back to who you're going to live with, where you're going to live. So I'm very grateful to have been able to do it. I definitely feel like I haven't earned it because I haven't. But then it's sort of brought its own downsides. Like, I think about money a lot more now than I did 2 years ago. You know, sort of 2 years ago, I wasn't really saving for anything. I had no mortgage that needed paying at the end of the month. Yeah, just the process of buying a house and now of owning a house and now, you know, murmuring about the economy and the interest rates. Like, I'm just so much more aware of money than I was. And I kind of miss being a bit more carefree with my finances, because anything that you're obsessed by, anything that you fear, anything that you sort of cling on to with two hands is what controls you, is what is your master, and you're its slave. You know, that's something Jesus said in the Bible, and can definitely see those tendencies when it comes to money in a way that is now more now I've bought a flat than it was before.
I think that's so interesting, because I find myself reading about interest rates and I'm like, when did I get so interested in interest rates? Like, I'd flip and Google Jerome Powell and what's the Fed's policy going to be. I'm like, when did I start doing this? So it's weird, isn't it, how the stuff that you surround yourself with and the stuff that you own, sort of, it's that weird sense, that weird dynamic. Like, do you own it? Does it own you? Like,
so let's summarize. So we talked about general feeling of dissatisfaction. Do we go to New Zealand? Do we
live in a van in a field?
But the fact is, we're prone to comparison and kind of thinking other people are having a really good time and we're missing out. And that can be a big cause of this quarter life crisis. Then we spoke about this feeling of paralysis because of there are just so many options as well. Then rootlessness of just, like you said, Rachel, it's similar to paralysis, I guess, but particularly around your home and where you live and do you put down roots or not? And that can be really destabilizing, as you said. And interesting, when you swap that for buying somewhere, there's a different set of problems, but that's probably another episode in itself. So that's great. We've often discussed, haven't we, about self-help and the rise of this kind of self-help movement. And I thought it'd be interesting for us just to think, okay, what's our way out of this quarter life crisis? Do we have the resources ourselves to do it? And as we start to think about the cure of the quarter life crisis, do you think we've got the resources ourselves, or would you say, to what extent, I guess, can we help ourselves out of that situation?
Yeah, so I suppose, like, I read various articles and books on the quarter life crisis as I was researching this book. And yeah, I mean, there's sensible steps that we can take if we're unhappy. If you're in a job you hate, then you can get a new job, you know, or if you are living somewhere you don't like, you know, and you've got the means, you can move. So yeah, sometimes we're afraid to make changes because we're afraid of the unknown. That's definitely my tendency. And yeah, we have freedom to change things up. But I guess what I appreciated reflecting on the book and reflecting as a Christian is the sort of our deeper needs and our deeper longings that underneath the surface, we can move the furniture around and it might be a better arrangement, but deep down there are kind of more fundamental things at play often.
I think that's so helpful that you could kind of play around with a few surface level things in your life, like mix up your job or like change your flatmate that was annoying you because they didn't wash up the dishes. But I think what you helpfully point to is us like, oh no, but there's some really deep rooted things. Like, what is the point? I mean, you call the book, Is This It? It's like, what is the point with my life? What's my purpose? What's my plan? What's the big passion that I've got? They're not things that you just kind of tinker around with and solve. They're just fundamental questions that are beyond your flatmate not washing up or your boss being slightly too micromanaging. And you can kind of think like, oh yeah, I'm kind of can sort this out and make it marginally better. But I think you're right. I think those sort of questions need much bigger cures and answers.
Yeah, Rich, I'd be curious to know. So it sounds like you've been on a journey on this over the last sort of 5 or 6 years, and you say you were in a different place emotionally and mentally at the time when you were writing that book. Would you say that you have sort of solved for this to an extent? And if so, what has it been that has helped you deal with some of these feelings?
I think there's two fundamental truths that I kept coming up against as I was thinking about this. One is kind of the theme of community and relationship. Humans are just wired to live in relationship with other humans. You know, that's just foundational to who we are. And that's something that the Bible affirms as true about what it means to be human. So the importance of relationships in our lives, not, you know, romantic relationships, but friendships where we're known and we're loved, and just the reality that those take time. You know, that was definitely something I learned. Those aren't sort of instant. And for me, like, it's been being part of a church where I found those kind of relationship, and that's been huge for me. And I guess the second thing is, like you were saying, you know, we've all got to come face to face with the fact that we have a sort of finite amount of time on this earth. Sometimes the quarter life crisis is where you get to the point where you're like, actually, I don't think I'm going to do all the things I want to do. You know, when you're 15, it feels like you've got forever in front of you. And then the older you get, the more you realize, actually, no, I don't have forever in front of me, which sounds pretty morbid. But yeah, it does take you back to that question. Is this it? Is this life all there is? And if so, what's it for? And again, like, as a Christian, the answer I kept coming back to was, no, this isn't it. There's more to this life, and there's more than this life. And the Christian faith invites you into a journey, a story about what God is doing in the world. And he stands outside of time. And so we can be part of something eternally significant when we invest in what he's doing in the world. And that's ultimately where I find a sense of purpose and meaning.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rachel. I think it's so interesting you talking about this finite amount of time versus the idea that you could actually know a God that sits outside of time, and in that way your life could be way more significant if you know that God, and that's real. But what's interesting is obviously God's invitation to be part of that plan is through a man who only lived on earth for 33 years, the man being Jesus. And admittedly, he did like pack quite a lot into those 33 years. But do you think, is Jesus able to help us with this issue of a quarter life crisis, given he was only on earth for about a quarter of his life? How helpful have you found knowing Jesus? And could you speak to that?
Yeah, one of the things I really love about Jesus is just how radically different his life was than what people expected of him, I guess. You know, he was first century Jew living in Israel, and lives 30 years of his life like in relative obscurity. And then bam, he like bursts onto this scene. He becomes this traveling rabbi teaching about this thing called God's kingdom. And it's completely not what people expect. It's completely upside down. It's not about putting yourself first and storing up treasure on earth or becoming great in the world's eyes. It's about serving others and storing up treasure in heaven. And he says the first will be last and the last will be first. And he just sort of preaches this message which is so unexpected. And I think often in our 20s, we kind of struggle with people's expectations for us and what we expect for ourselves. And often the quarter life crisis is about those expectations not matching up with our reality. And then Jesus comes along with this message and this way of life that blows everyone's expectations out of the water. And yeah, as a follower of Jesus, that's the kind of life that I want to live. I mean, in some ways it looks very conventional, but in other ways I want it to look unconventional and to look different, because I'm following a savior who was so unexpected.
It's funny because he didn't hit any of the traditional milestones. Didn't get married, didn't have kids, never really had a home, just sofa surfed his whole life, and then was killed. And you think, oh, why do you want to follow him? Like you say, like, why is he the guy that of everyone you could aspire to be like? But what he said was, actually, life isn't about hitting those milestones. It's about knowing and loving your creator. It's about living for him and not just yourself. And it's not about accumulation. It's about being generous and giving everything away. It's not about how many friends you've got, but how many people you can care for. Like you say, it's so radically different to what our culture holds up as the expectations of a 33-year-old. I love it.
Do you know, Jack, one thing I'm thinking right now is this is actually such an interesting stance to approach Christianity from, because it's like there are just some big questions that I'm wrestling with right now. And there is a man who, it's historically factual that he existed, and he's giving answers to some of these big questions. If you strip everything else away, all your preconceptions and things that you've heard about, and just say, I've got big questions I'm wrestling with, let me look at the answers that this bloke is giving. Do they make sense to me? And I think actually, like, I know we're all Christians, so I assume that that's kind of the journey that we went on of this seems to be answering these questions. And when I test them, they hold water. And I think that it's just a really interesting and refreshing way to approach it. It's just check this out. Does it feel like a satisfying answer? It doesn't have to be more complicated than that.
Satisfying, maybe, but let's take one like paralysis. How would being a follower of Jesus help someone in their paralysis?
In my experience of that, so going back to this feeling of real loneliness and paralysis and being lost when I was 23, 24 years old living in London, actually the answer, the thing that really helped me with that, Rachel, and you mentioned this earlier, was actually joining a church again. I just found this community of people that I felt welcome at and that I felt, you know, part of. But it was also reconnecting with my Christian faith. All these questions that I was wrestling with, I would say it was really a quarter-life crisis. Like, I just suddenly found the answers to those questions in really big, all-encompassing ways. Like, well, the purpose of my life is kind of answered in this. Everything else, yeah, I can try and make good decisions, but actually I don't need to worry about, is this meaningful? Am I going to be remembered in thousands of years' time? Like, actually, that all kind of pales into its significance because I've got the answers here. You know, but then it ebbs and flows. Like, as Rachel was saying, we're now in a situation where it got bad cladding on our flat and we feel a bit trapped by that. And I find myself getting really frustrated and angry about that often on Saturday mornings, which my wife really loves. You know, despite being a Christian now, I still have these moments. So it does ebb and flow, but ultimately I can rest on the fact that I think I do have solid fundamental answers to these questions. And that's what I find really helpful.
I guess for me, it's helpful to know that the journey has an endpoint, and the endpoint is a good one because that's what Jesus has promised me. That's the Christian hope for a world with him. And so whatever decisions I make in the meantime, you know, whatever I do or don't do, whether they're good decisions or bad decisions, if I stick with him, then I know that that's where the journey's going to end. So that kind of frees me that in lots of ways, you know, you can't make a wrong decision in some ways, because, you know, whatever path you take, then, you know, with Jesus, the path ends in the same place. That's what I find reassuring.
Yeah, that's really helpful. So let's try and wrap things up. I know we're just scratching the surface of what could be, as we said, very deep existential questions for some of our listeners. And as we've unpacked a few of these different causes of our crises, there's so much more we could say. But Rachel, I'm really grateful for your honesty. I think you have articulated what a lot of people feel but are too afraid to say. So I think that's really brave. And also, I think what's been really helpful is in the place where you might least expect it, as you said, you found answers to your biggest questions that have helped you move on in the last few years. And that is a powerful and really exciting kind of prospect to leave some of our listeners with. And I know we can't do all of that justice, but even in just the small ways you were able to point to that, I'm really grateful. So thank you for your time. And who cares in 5 years if you cross any more milestones? I think you've proved that actually it's not about ticking those off. You're able to answer life's biggest questions without ticking them off. And even when you do, like the flat buy, you're not even that convinced by it. Maybe we'll check in. How does that sound?
Yeah, sounds good.
Same time, same place, 5 years' time.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Rachel. Really, really fun talking to you.
My pleasure.